Hey there, podcast family. T-Bone here to talk about the 3D Dentist Digital Implant Continuum. Are you ready to start placing dental implants, but feeling a bit hesitant and or overwhelmed? I know that feeling. I've been there. Let's change that together. Imagine not just learning about dental implants in a classroom, but actually performing surgeries on real patients right here in North Carolina, guided every step of the way by our expert 3D mentors. This is dental implant learning at its best, using techniques that are safe, predictable, and confidence-boosting. They're exactly what I use in my own practice, so you know they work. Our course goes beyond clinical skills. We prepare you to successfully integrate high-demand implant services into your practice, transforming your career by attracting new patients and elevating your practice. And it doesn't end with the course. Completing our program is just the beginning of a new journey. You'll be a part of a community of confident, skilled dentists with ongoing support to ensure lasting success and growth. After all, this is about mastering a skill that can transform your career, just like it did for me. So, are you ready to take your practice to the next level? Visit www.3d-dentist.com, check out our upcoming sessions, and join us to revolutionize your practice. 3D Dentist is truly committed to helping dentists take control of their practice, finances, and future. Now let's get back to this week's episode. All right, everybody. We've had a slight change in plans. I randomly got a call from a dear friend, and I was quite shocked and surprised and happy to hear from you today, Ross.
Well, we were in town teaching for another local practice here, group practice, and Shaw Pease and my associate and I came, and we got through a little early, so Shaw drove me through the city because he knew where your practice was. And I said, oh, wow. So I gave you a call.
I appreciate that. Yeah. So I'm sitting here with Dr. Ross Nash, who's here visiting Raleigh, trying to help other practices compete with me. I appreciate that. But good for you. Good for them, by the way, for being smart enough to bring somebody like you in.
Thank you.
For those of the listeners that don't know, Ross is a giant in dentistry. You know, you're not a giant in stature necessarily, you know.
No, sure.
You know, well, I'm not even short. I'm just saying you're not big like me, you know. So that's good for you. And but you're in Charlotte, North Carolina. You've been there since probably the 80s now?
Yes. I opened my practice there in 1980.
And so in the 80s. And you also run the Nash Institute.
Yes, sir.
And so, you know, listen, I want to tell our listeners my story with Ross. So I think it was 1999, I believe. I had just gotten out of school. You were doing the program. I still don't know how to say it.
Aesthetic epitome.
Epitome is what I called it. The aesthetic epitome / epitome. And it was a multi-day class that you had in Charlotte. At the time in your office building in South Park, it's actually attached to your practice. And so I went down there. It was on direct composites, indirect restorations, porcelain veneers. It was my first exposure to the type of dentistry that I ended up wanting to do. And it was my first exposure to real CE. And for me, it was lucky. I mean, I look back and I mean this very sincerely. I look back that I was lucky that I took your class.
Thank you.
Because I could have taken anybody's class, right? But you really showed me what dentistry could be. And to me, that was so important. And then one thing led to another. And I really kind of remember me finagling my way in.
No, we ask you to be a mentor.
Well, that's nice of you to say, Ross. But yeah. I remember just kind of showing up and you guys probably like, what in the world does this guy keep doing here? And I just wanted to be a part of it. You know, you guys were doing great things. You were a gracious educator, a phenomenal clinician, a legitimately phenomenal clinician. And Deborah was fantastic.
Thank you.
Great business-minded lady with a real grasp of how to communicate with patients and build team. And so I just wanted to be part of it. And so I was happy to pay my way down there. I was happy to pay to be down there. You know, and I was early in my career, so I had plenty of time. But I will tell you this, and I mean this unbelievably sincerely. What I learned from you as a dentist was unbelievably important.
But what I learned from my experience there as a mentor was immensely important in me developing my career as a speaker and educator. Some of the things that I learned from you was how to be a phenomenal clinician, how to connect with people, how to be down to earth, how to be, you know, and I say this in a nice way, how to be simple. You know, we're doing complex works that, quite frankly, that maybe 5 or 10%, 15% of the dentists really do. But what I saw from you was a way to not look complicated and a way to make it, you know, inspiring and achievable. And somebody that was, that made me feel like, hey, if he can do it, I can do it. And, you know, that those are some of the things I learned.
Thank you. That's very nice of you to say.
And, you know, my drive for excellence, how to work, the importance of working with manufacturers and trying to develop your career and trying to help spread your message.
Yeah.
You know, some of these things aren't as important in today's world, but certainly in 1999 and 2000, they were unbelievably important.
Thank you. Well, it's nice to know.
And I've always been fond of you in that way, so I appreciate it. So,
well, you have obviously jumped way far past that, T-Bone.
I would like to
think
so. I
knew him before it was T-Bone.
Yeah.
It was Tarun.
Yes.
But you've done, I'm really proud of what you've done. And
thank
to help
you.
Your peers.
Well, isn't that what we do this for? It's not, yeah. Many people think we do it for the money. And the truth is we're better off in our practice.
Yeah, not a lot of money.
Yeah,
in
we're really better off in our practice.
Yeah. You have to have the passion for it.
But, and I love it. What I love is when I see our students be more successful than us.
Me too.
And that is, you know, it's like a parent in a way. You know, every parent wants their kids to do better than them.
Yeah.
And that's really how I look at educating.
Good for you, my friend.
So what's your story, Ross? I mean, for our listeners that don't know who Ross Nash is or don't quite understand who Ross Nash is, talk to us about it.
Thank you. Let me give you a nutshell.
Okay.
It goes back.
Now, well, we don't need the 1890 story. Okay?
No, not going back. But I do need you to know the basis of where I came from. I graduated from North Carolina State University in 1970 with a degree in textile engineering. And I went to work in the engineering field in textiles. I worked for DuPont as a process engineer in a nylon yarn manufacturing plant in Martinsville, Virginia for a couple of years.
Those jobs are in China now.
Yeah, I know. That changed. Everything's changed. But I learned a lot about resins because nylon's a resin. So that helped me, I believe, later when I decided to become a dentist. A couple of years there, and then I was offered a job in Charlotte, my hometown, with Ciba Geigy Chemical Company, and they make dyes and chemicals and pharmaceuticals. Well, I was in the dyes and chemicals for textile fibers division, and I was a dye colorist or a chemist.
Mm-hmm.
And it was my job with Ciba Geigy to make dyes that gave certain colors on certain fabrics for the customer. So I learned a lot about color, hue, value, chroma, all those kind of things. So it was interesting that those two parts of my background ultimately helped me in dentistry. But I wanted what dentists had, you know, I wanted to be able to affect people and affect people's lives every day on a one-to-one basis. And that's what dentistry is.
And your own boss.
Yeah. And that too, my own boss. I was in a corporate world and I liked the idea. So I applied to dental school and I was lucky enough to get in at Chapel Hill. And at the age of 27, almost 28, I went back to school, graduated nearly 31 years old. I went out and I was an associate for a couple of years in Eden, North Carolina, and then I started my practice in
Eden
Charlotte.
Is on the coast?
Yeah, well, no, it's north. It's north. Near Virginia.
Okay, near Virginia.
It's
an
associateship position to get me started. But then I opened my own practice in my home, Charlotte, North Carolina, in 1980. And in just a few short years there, I had a nice little general practice going. I was placing amalgams and doing some crowns and some restorative and some partials and dentures and preventive, you know, good old bread and butter general dentistry. I was having a great time, but something happened in dentistry that time in our dental history that changed the face of dentistry. Light cured composites came on the scene.
Tooth colored composites and light cured because we had
light
acrylics.
Cured. We had chemically cured materials when I was in dental school. A couple of them, Concise and Adaptic, and you could do a few things with them, like a class 3 or maybe a class 4 anterior with a couple of pins to hold it in. That was about it. Now we had these unbelievable materials beyond gold and silver and porcelain fused metal. We had aesthetic materials that could also restore the tooth, and you could adhesively bond them to the tooth. And they had colors that would blend in dentin, enamel, incisal shades as time went on. And you could command cure these, and we found you could indeed bond to dentin. It was such an exciting time in dentistry back in the early 80s. And I was right in the middle of it. So because of my background, I understood these things a little bit more maybe than the average dentist, and I started taking courses from the gurus, the pioneers like Norman Feigenbaum, Buddy Mopper, Ron Goldstein, Paul Belvedere, Erwin Smigel. Some of these people have passed away. But they were out there doing these things with composite that nobody ever did. And most of the courses, the hands-on courses, were given to my manufacturers because the dental schools weren't even teaching it yet. Right. So I would go out and take these courses, and I would come home, and I would do these procedures. And I have to tell you, it changed my life.
You loved them, didn't you?
I loved them. I love being a dentist. I still do. I like being a doctor, and it's my responsibility to help people with their function and health. That's my responsibility as a doctor. But I could not only be a doctor, I could be someone who helped people with their self-esteem. Someone would come in with black decay on their front tooth or a broken front tooth, something that would really bother them aesthetically. And in one single appointment, I could change that tooth to look like not a tooth color filling, a natural tooth. And I would get tears of joy and hugs and kisses. And
people wanted to visit you.
Letters of a thank you and bottles of wine and referrals. And
you mean you didn't get that with your amalgams?
No. But what I liked about it was not only the thing I did for their health, but what I did for people's self-esteem. And it made me happy. And that's what I said, this is it. This is what I'm going to do with my career. I want to focus on aesthetics. What can I do that will give the patient the health and function I'm responsible for as a doctor and the aesthetics they're looking for as an artist? It comes down to composites and ceramics.
Right.
We found out later you could actually bond ceramics to the tooth, and that changed everything again. So I was right at the beginning, and I started focusing my practice on aesthetics early in my career. I was the local bondodontist.
When it wasn't good to be a bondodontist.
Exactly. You know how dentistry is. Very slow to change, conservative
kind
profession.
Kind of like people that did marketing in the 90s.
Exactly. I was looked upon as, you know, the guy. You be careful about this guy. But over the years, I gained respect for my profession, and that's important to me.
That's important to me, too.
I want to be liked, you know. But I stuck to my guns. I mean, I had a few people not liking what I was doing. But over the years, I built a practice in Charlotte that was known for aesthetics on purpose. I let people know that I could do it. If I found someone that needed a smile makeover and they were in the public eye, I try to do it, even if I did it for nothing, to get my name out there, to let people know this is what I'm doing. And that's what happened over a period of years. And that's why I'm probably our practice, Cosmetic Dentistry of the Carolinas, which is in Huntersville, North Carolina, right outside of Charlotte on Lake Norman, is known as one of the best or one of the top cosmetic practices. But that was by design. I've got plenty of competition.
So not luck?
No.
No.
No, it's by design. Don't get me wrong. I'm going to tell you, I've got plenty of competition. Right. Lots of good dentists.
Great dentists, yeah.
But I've got 41 years of experience, and that makes a big difference.
As long as you tell people about it, although you let people know.
Oh, yeah.
Or other people tell people for you.
I'm so excited about it. They catch it from me.
Yeah.
And it's just a passion I've got. And I believe I don't make any more money than any other successful dentist. But I believe that if you're passionate about what you do, you'll do it longer. I'm almost 72, and I'm still doing it. I don't plan to stop. And you'll make more money doing what you love doing.
Yeah. Well, you'll at least enjoy it, even if you don't. Yeah.
So that's my law. I'm sorry about the length. That's my history.
How'd you get into education? I mean,
that's another thing. In the early 1980s, Kerr Manufacturing was looking for somebody to talk about their product. They came up with the first hybrid composite still on the market. Mm-hmm. Don't even advertise it, and it's still sold. Herculite. Mm-hmm. And before that, we had macrophils and microphils. And so they were looking for somebody to talk about it. Well, I had the engineering background they liked, and I talked to some of their people, and I was out in the seminars, and they asked me if I'd be interested in talking about it. And that's how I got my seminar career started. I had never spoken in front of a crowd, ever. But I was very comfortable talking about something I was this passionate about to one person or 500 people. And that's how my seminar career, I would go out and do programs to teach people how to use their composite like the other companies were doing. Somebody would ask me to come to their local dental society or their study club or the state society and then the national. And
one thing led to another.
Yeah. And that's how my career was built.
I think you left out something very important, Ross. I think it all started for you on the education side because you documented your work.
Yeah, no question.
Because you got to be able to show people what you're doing. And from what I remember of you, and I know that to be true today, is that you didn't document your work just before and after. You documented step by step what you're doing, how you're doing it. And this was back when you probably had one of those things called?
Slides.
So, yeah.
Little celluloid things with pictures on.
And so you'd have to make these little carousels.
Hey, those cost $1 a piece.
I know.
And I had 200,000 of them over 20 years. 200,000 slides. I spent $200,000 on slides. But best documentation you had. Now they're free.
Now the digital cameras, yeah.
Yeah, once we went to digital, I took 2 million.
Yeah.
And they're all, they're free. You just have to have more hard drive space. So I've got even more. But you're right. Document, document, document. And someone told me at the National Speakers Association, I went one year and joined, that if you would write articles for your local, for your dental publications, right, and they're always looking for articles, then you would be asked to speak. You would be known. And I started writing articles.
Yeah.
So it all came down to, I love doing dentistry. I still do it. And I love to teach just like you.
Yeah. And, it's amazing. Today, that's Instagram photos and Facebook photos and Dentaltown photos. But there's still a place for the reputation you get from being in the journals.
Yes.
Especially certainly the well-thought-of journals. And I would always tell anybody that, and it's true for me, too. For me, my story was taking photographs and sharing it on the social media of the time, which was Dentaltown. And again, same thing. Show it. Manufacturers, hey, do you mind coming and showing other people how to do it? We need a speaker for this. Dental society right here, dental society share there. And you share. And you share, you share with, I want to say with impunity. You share with a love for helping people. You didn't share with an ask every single time. Certainly you ask. There's a time where you have to run a business and ask. But you shared with helping people.
There's also one key thing in my history that helped make my career and my life, to be honest with you. I met Deborah Engelhardt.
Right.
Deborah was a practice management consultant on her own at Deborah Engelhardt & Associates Consulting in Seattle, Washington. It was back in 1990. I went to the ADA meeting in Seattle, and she was on the program. And I just fell madly in love with her. I was going through a divorce. I hadn't finished it yet, but I was planning to finish it. And I saw her, met her, got to talk to her. She had no idea, by the way. And I just fell madly in love with her. Didn't forget about her. I went home, didn't see her for a year. Went to the ADA meeting in Orlando the next year. I went to a cocktail party, and I had a couple of drinks, I'll admit it. Went to a cocktail party, there she was in this blue dress and just knocked me off my feet. And I went to her and I had, like I said, I had a couple of drinks. I was loose and I said, hey, I've been thinking about you all year. Turned out she felt the same way and she bought that blue dress hoping she'd run into me.
Good
that was kind of neat. So 4 years later, she married me and moved to Charlotte, 1995. Started managing my practice. First year, I doubled my net income. That tells you how important the business center dentistry is. I don't like the business.
You want to be a clinician.
You got to have it. You can't deliver a service without having a successful business. But I like the service.
Yeah.
She handles the business. So together, we started the Nash Institute.
Yeah.
Stay with us. We'll be right back.
Hey, podcast family. T-Bone here. Are you a dentist looking to elevate your practice and profits? Then pay close attention. Introducing the 3D Business Mastermind, the dental business coaching program designed for dentists who want to see real results. I've walked the path of practice ownership for nearly 25 years. I know your challenges. I felt your pain. This is your opportunity to overcome the chaos, the busyness, and the financial frustrations of owning a dental practice. Imagine a dental practice where your appointment book is highly productive, doing the dentistry you enjoy, your team is self-motivated, and your profits keep climbing. That's what the 3D Business Mastermind is all about. In this exclusive mastermind, you'll join a league of ambitious dentists driven to elevate their practices. You'll gain access to proven strategies, personalized coaching, and a community that understands your journey. So if you're ready to supercharge your dental practice and enjoy the success you deserve, visit www.3d-dentists.com and take the first step towards a brighter future in dentistry by filling out the 3D Business Mastermind application. Now, let's get to this week's episode.
So, and like still running today.
Running today.
Focusing on cosmetic dentistry.
Yep.
Anterior aesthetics, posterior aesthetics.
We have three courses.
Now, talk to me about those.
Okay. We have a curriculum of three courses, which are a continuum: direct composites, indirect restorations, and full mouth rehabilitation. Those three courses, 2 days, both of them, Friday and Saturday, hands-on, half hands-on. They're AGD PACE approved. So that's our continuum. Three individual courses you can take independently. You don't have to take them all three, but as a group of courses, they are a continuum. We do that 5 times a year. That's 15 courses I teach at the Institute. My wife teaches 4 courses on the practice success. She calls it Dental Business School, and she has teams in there. So we're in operation, you know, 19 weekends a month, and then we also both speak on the road. So that's our life. It is, and I practice 3 days a week. I'll be 72 in September. I don't plan to stop. I practice what my passion is, and I teach what my passion is, and it just keeps me going.
It's not even work anymore, is it?
No. The reason I can work 3 days is because I found the ideal associate.
Yeah. Yeah, that's, you know, and that's been important to me. So tell me, Ross, what are the important things? Let's say you were talking to your associate, okay, or talking to a young dentist or something, and what would you say are the important things that's really shaped your career?
Finding the one thing.
Okay.
My passion. I don't believe you can be good at all. Now, don't get me wrong. There's all kinds of things you can do in dentistry.
Yeah.
You're an expert in implants and 3D dentistry. I tried to be an expert in aesthetic dentistry. A lot of dentists try to do it all. Endo, perio. It's okay. You can do it in general practice, and you can do it well. But I believe if you find the one thing that really drives you, and mine was aesthetics, you're going to be more successful. So I would say find the part of dentistry you love and focus on it. You don't have to be good at everything, but be good at something.
Okay, so great. I have a passion for cosmetics, okay? You've met an associate who also has a passion for cosmetics. But I'm not Ross. You know, I don't have 41 years of experience. Let's turn back the time, and how did you build a practice that's essentially focused on cosmetics and has a tracted reputation that brings in pretty well-known people? Yeah, how do you build that?
On purpose.
Okay, so talk to me about, what do you mean by on purpose?
I had the goal. I wanted to be the best in my field, one of the best in my field, whatever that field was. I chose cosmetics because I loved it, and I worked towards that goal. I made sure that when I did a good cosmetic case, that other people knew about it.
Now, how would you let them know about it?
I photograph everything I do.
Okay.
Of course, I get permission from my patients. I put together a photo album. Of course, you can do it online now. Yeah. And I can show people cases much like theirs. I built a portfolio of my own, not just pictures of other people that have done it in other books, Ron Goldstein's Change Your Smile, all those things are out there. But I built my own portfolio of before and after pictures, and I can find something in there that's very close.
If I walk in with a diastema between eight and nine, I have tetracycline staining, you can probably recall a patient that's literally almost exactly.
I've got like a half a dozen cases just like that I've done. And when they can see that I've done it for somebody else, just like them,
it becomes real.
It's powerful.
Yeah.
So that's why my associate, when he came with me a year and a half ago, I encouraged him to start building his own portfolio, take lots of pictures, and he does. He's become a tremendous photographer.
You know, I tell him, it's funny you talk about that. I still, to this day, like my speaking career started on dental photography. And I would tell you my practice was built on dental photography. I mean, listen, I was 23 years old when I graduated dental school. And I was 20,
young.
you know, I was 23 essentially when I opened my practice. I barely turned 24 when I opened my practice. You know, and I didn't look old like I do now. I looked young, and I was much thinner and had hair. But it was hard to get people to accept $5,000, $10,000, $15,000 worth of work when you're 24 years old.
It is.
And what was important to me, and we weren't quite digital at the time. I used to go get 1 hour prints done. So while the patient would come in, we'd take their photographs, we'd do their cleaning, all that stuff. We'd have the 1 hour prints done across the street, and we'd come back and show them the photographs literally in prints. And it was so important to help us sell dentistry.
That's interesting, because that's exactly what I do, David. I do it digitally.
Yeah.
When a patient comes in for a consult, we take, and I ask, may I take some photographs? Yes. Yeah. Take a full face, smile, both sides, retracted, frontal, both sides, biting, both occlusal views.
Right.
Put them in the computer, put them right up on the screen in front of them. Before we start talking, we're looking at those pictures together.
And your patient starts pointing out things.
And they expand their own treatment plans. Yeah. That's my teeth. I say, you have really good structure here. Lots of good things to work with. I encourage them.
Yeah. Unless got to give them hope.
Unless there's not.
Right.
Yeah. And then maybe they come in because they're interested in something about their two front teeth. And now they're saying, well, what about those teeth beside it? Expand their own treatment plans. So pictures, very important for communication.
Yeah, you know, it's so important to me. Like, I don't know how your practice runs. We don't have intraoral cameras in our practice. I don't see a need for them.
We do extraoral.
Yeah. We do DSLR extraoral cameras. And quite frankly, we have one in every operatory. That's how important photography is for me, that everybody in our office, a condition of employment is that you learn how to take excellent photographs based on your position.
Right.
You know, and that's super important. All right. So what would be the one thing that you would tell somebody that's young that wanted to say, I want to be the next Ross Nash? What would you tell them?
Find your one thing.
Yeah.
What you're passionate about. It may not be cosmetic dentistry. It may be implants. It may be gold foil. I don't know if you remember what that is. But find the one thing that gives you reward and focus on being the best you can at that. You don't have to be good at everything. You have to have the... I have a dream team out at Lake Norman, North Carolina. I got the periodontist, the oral surgeon, the endodontist, the orthodontist. I've got my dream team that can put anything together that I want, and we FaceTime with our patients. But I'm good at defining the aesthetics and completing it. That's my passion. Find your passion and get really good at it.
So that involves taking education?
Oh, yeah.
Whether that's YouTube, obviously we prefer in person. Yeah. Because, you know, I keep telling people there's nothing wrong with YouTube, Instagram, Facebook education. No. It's good. It's a great foundation. You can learn a lot, quite frankly. But what you can't learn on YouTube or the computer is interaction, communication.
Sure. Yep.
You can't learn, you can't feel passion through a computer screen. You can't meet somebody. You can't talk to them. I mean, think about how many of your best friends in dentistry today are people that you met at education courses that you took?
Many.
Almost all, right?
Yes.
You know, and you guys lifted each other.
Yeah.
You know, you kind of brought each other up, and part of it's that competitive gene. Like, I know you're good friends with Larry Rosenthal.
Yeah.
And there's a competitive gene. As much as, yes, we respect what Larry's done, but this part of it's like, I can do what he does.
Yeah.
You know, and he's doing this. Next time you see him, hey, how are you doing that? And then you're like, okay, I want to go back and try that in my office, and vice versa as well, you know? And
You've got to be, this is no secret in dentistry. You got to be a continual student because it's changing so fast.
Now more than ever.
That's why I have my millennial with me.
Just to do your Instagram posting for you.
No, more than that.
I know.
More than that. Second nature is the technology to them.
Okay. So, you brought up millennial and associate. You know, spring chicken. I don't mean that with disrespect. I mean, you're 72, you know, it's no spring chicken.
Yeah.
So you have to bring in an associate because there has to be some way of transitioning, some way of mentoring. So let's talk about that a little bit. Talk to me about.
The reason really that I got an associate was because I was doing all the work. I mean, I had a one-man practice. It was me. Doing well, don't get me wrong, but it was all me. And when you're focusing on these big cases, it's hard to even get up and check hygiene.
You can't.
You've got to focus, or you're going to make mistakes. That's when you do them over.
Right.
So you need to focus. And I had a nice little general practice, not as big as some of these out here, mm-hmm. because I do a lot of aesthetic work and with patients that come in just for that and then go somewhere else. But I have a nice general practice. You got to take care of those people. And I found myself being rushed on big cases, and that doesn't feel good. So what my associate has been able to do for me is let me cut back to 3 days a week. Remember, 72 years old mm-hmm. in September. Your back will feel it. One day makes a big difference.
My back feels it at 43, man.
There you go. But one day has made a big difference for me. So I work 3 days a week on patients. He takes care of the 4 days in the general practice. Plus, he does some pretty darn good aesthetic work to himself.
Well, he's going to have to. He's in your practice.
Well, that's the nice thing about it. He gets exposure to the types of patients that want that high-quality dentistry. So he's had the opportunity to do some of it that others might not have. But it's been really good for me. We've been together a year and a half. Practice is doing better than it was before he came. My back feels better. Mm-hmm. I can focus. And it's just been a very, very good thing for us. As far as our future goes, it's up in the air. We're open.
You know, it's interesting you talk about focus. And I had this, I don't want to say argument. I had this rant with my team maybe a couple of months ago. And I said to them, I said, listen, I was talking to one of my hygienists who I have a great relationship with. We give each other a little bit of stuff every once in a while, you know. I said to her, I said, listen, at the end of the day, you're pretty much doing hygiene day in and day out. You know, that's what you do. Every one of your patients is essentially pretty much the same. Yeah, they got different little differences here and there. But I said, what happens is sometimes I'm asked to do two hygiene checks. So I'm in my room doing my larger work, or even even if it's a quadrant of fillings. I mean, that's mentally draining to me, quite frank with you.
You have to focus.
Yeah, you got to focus, right? And then I got to get up and I got to reset my mind to go do a new patient exam. And then I got to reset my mind to go do a recall on a patient who's been with me for 15 years. And then I got to reset my mind to go back and do whatever it is I was doing. And then I got to, when that patient said, I got to reset my mind to go do a consult for somebody who's here to get something fancy done to them. You know, and it's not the physical part for me that drives me nuts. It's the mental of having to switch your mind over and over and over again. And the truth is I think that's what holds so many people back from developing practice that they want, is that they're mentally not focused. And so one of the things I tell a lot of people, and as I say, when you're going down that path of starting an aesthetics practice like Ross Nash, you got to pick a day, a week, that you make your ideal day, that you go in and you say, and I tell people it should be your day off. You know, be committed to it, that on your day off, once a week, once a month, whatever it is in the beginning, that you committed so that you can go in there and do your absolute best work. And that you could document that work, because it's hard to document work when you're running around checking two hygienists.
It is.
And documentation, I get this. I don't know if you get this. I get people that say, well, I'm not trying to be an instructor or a teacher. I don't need to document my work. And I totally disagree with them. You may not need to take 20 pictures, but you darn need to take 5 or 6 pictures of every case you do, because that's how you sell your dentistry.
Well,
that's
how you get better. It's more than that. There is no better documentation than photography. Let's say you had some kind of a legal problem. Right. You got a picture of it, you're in a lot better shape.
Yeah.
And it just helps you grow. You've got to document,
it makes
document,
you better.
Document. No,
you know, if you're a conscientious dentist that wants to be better, in fact, I tell dental students that I meet, I say, you want to get the job that you dream of? Walk into an interview with a portfolio of dentistry. And it may be amalgams. Okay, it may be hand-rotated endo. But when you walk in with a portfolio of your work, it speaks volumes for the type of person that you are.
Yeah.
And so it's super important.